You're listening to a Catholic news podcast from the Catholic Bishops' Conference of England and Wales. Why not use iTunes to subscribe to our podcast? Simply search for Catholic News in the iStore. Hello, and welcome to our latest Catholic News podcast, where the subject is Sea Sunday. Now, that's taking place on the 12th of July and is a very good opportunity for us, actually, to remember, celebrate and pray for our seafarers. Now, where would we be without them? Not very far, I have to say, because our goods come from all around the world, of course. And we need to be paying a bit of attention to those that bring them to us and work very, very hard with very little praise, I think, sometimes. Now, in order for us to discuss this, I'm delighted to say we're joined by two of Apostleship of the Seas port chaplains. I have Father Colin Kelly, who's port chaplain for Immingham, I believe, and Reverend Roger Stone, who's port chaplain, and get this, is going to be the longest intro I think I've ever done, for Southampton, Forley, Portsmouth, Cowes, Poole, Shoreham, Portland and Weymouth. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
That is the longest intro I've ever done. Not that there's anything wrong with Immingham, of course, and I've been
there. I could go to Immingham, Grimsby, New Holland, the Trent Wharves. Yeah, we could go a long way as well.
You've got big pastoral areas.
Yeah, very much so.
We can say that.
Yeah, very big.
Well, it's lovely to have you here. And I think my first question would be, you know, why is it important that we talk about, celebrate and pray for our seafarers?
Well, we're so dependent upon our seafarers, as you mentioned, for practically everything that comes into our homes. Utterly dependent on them. I mean, there's figures bandied about around 90-95% of all we use in our homes, all the things we depend upon for our electricity and so on, comes by sea. And yet the lives of the people who bring all these things is largely a mystery to the world. People know that the goods arrive, but they're not quite sure who actually brings them to us. And I think it's somewhat of an invisible world.
Yeah, I agree with that. If people listening to this would just have a look around them, the clothes that they're wearing, imagine the kitchens or the living rooms and think what they have in there, all the electronic goods, the white goods, all the food, a lot of food that's in the kitchen and in the bowls and around the house, what have you. All that food, or most of that food, will have come from abroad. All the technology will have come from abroad, the iPhones, the iPads, all this stuff is brought to us by seafarers. And as Colin said, they're largely invisible. And what we try to do is convert their invisibility into visibility by visiting the ships when they come into ports that we're responsible for, but not really visiting the ships. We visit the seafarers who work on the ships, and we do that every day of the year.
How much of your time do you spend on the ships, or is this when they're docked and they have their time where they're in sort of their centres?
Yeah, we have a programme every day given to us by the Port Authority of what ships are coming in and how long they're staying. We can usually work that out by the size of the ships and the cargo that they are discharging. So if we know a ship's going to be in for 2 or 3 days, chances are it's been on a pretty long voyage. And it would be very important to get onto a ship like that to talk to the lads, see how they are, where they've come from, what issues they face while at sea, what issues they're facing while they are in port. And, of course, what they would maybe like us to do or ask us to do by way of providing services, you know, religious services, welfare services, or anything that we can do for them. But there's a sense of urgency to try and get on as many ships as you can, just to cover as broad a spectrum as possible.
Now, it's interesting that, because you can, I suppose, work out if someone's sort of more in need, perhaps, been at sea an awful long time. And do you sort of learn how to pitch it depending on what the crew have been through, or do you just wait and see what you encounter?
Oh, you never know what's going to happen when you walk up a gangway, unless you have some advance notice, which is quite rare still. And that's actually where the frisson and the excitement is for us as well, not knowing what's going to happen when you go onto a ship. Because, as you can imagine, with people who are away, and it's predominantly men on the merchant ships, some women increasingly, but mostly men on the merchant ships. There's so many, the whole gamut of human emotions. The principal problem for seafarers still is, because they're away from home for so long, 9 months, 10 months, sometimes 12 months to stretch, working every day, never a day off, they're separated from their families for so long. And so where we can help immediately, really, is to enable them to communicate with their families. If they've come over from South America, for example, they may have been at sea for 19 days with zero contact with anybody. So they're desperate to know what's happening at home when they come onto the port, and we can help with that.
How do you help with that?
Well, we have a number of MiFi units, which one of the mobile networks is helping us with, through the generosity of benefactors of AOS, I should say, as well. And so we can take the MiFi unit onto the ship, and then five and sometimes eight seafarers can actually connect to the internet at the same time, so they can have a look at Facebook, see what's happening with their families. They can have a look at their children. The other day I was on a ship, and there's a young man, his son celebrated his first birthday. He was at sea, but he was able to see the picture when he got into port. We were able to help him to see the picture of his son on his first birthday, which is always very special.
And Colm, is there a need for you guys to keep up with the latest technology, people FaceTiming and Skyping and all that?
It would be very desirable, and some of us find it easier than others, I would have to say. The interesting point Roger made about going up to a ship and not knowing what you're going to find there, sometimes we do know. For example, just recently I got a call from the harbour master to be available to get onto a ship that was coming in as soon as possible because one of the lads had been lost overboard on the entrance to the estuary. And there was great sadness on the ship and great confusion and anger and people wondering what on earth had happened. And the body has not been found yet. And that was a month or so ago. Goodness. So sometimes you do know what's going on. And generally, if you do know what you're going to find on a ship, generally it may not be a good situation. You know, there could be deaths on ships.
Salaries not paid.
Yeah.
That's quite frequent. Yep.
Yeah. Guys going hungry because of this invisible world. You know, we often asked when we go around giving talks around the country and we tell these horror stories, people will say, well, how can this happen in this day and age that people could be treated unfairly like this? And it happens because the world they inhabit is an invisible world. And in an invisible world, all kinds of things can happen.
So what do you think we should know that we don't know already? How can we bring some light, some visibility to this, do you think?
Well, that's really the purpose of Sea Sunday, is to make sure that parishes all around the country, and with speaking specifically within the Catholic context at the moment, to make sure that all parishes support Sea Sunday, that with the Apostleship of the Sea, head office here in London, issues a resource pack to all parishes, so it encourage parish priests, parish clergy, parish people, whoever's in charge, as it were, to make sure they use those resources and to raise the awareness of just how much everybody, every single person in this country, relies on the seafarers who work on the ships.
Now, it was interesting, Colm, your point about the really sad story about the man overboard, because it must be quite hard for there to be any closure, especially if you know the body hasn't been found. That must be terribly traumatic.
It is, and even in instances where a body is not found and there's no closure there. I mean, the ship just turns around and goes. There's no sense of waiting around until maybe we will find him tonight or not. I mean, I had one ship where three were dead, three out of a crew of 12 had died on the ship, and their bodies were airlifted off the ship, and they were, in the mortuary people, the relatives knew where they were. But you can imagine the awful, awful sense of in the lives of the crew, how that is so disruptive, and just makes that they just can't understand how three people could die on one ship.
Mm. It's clearly a dangerous job.
It can be. Accidents do happen, sadly. It's not just on the merchant ships, it happens on the cruise ships as well sometimes. Not that long ago, a young Filipino crew member died on one of the Carnival ships, on a Cunard ship, and they asked me to fly to the ship, which I did, and went on board to support the crew, because although there's 1,200 crew on board, they're still actually quite a small family. They all know each other largely. Mm. And so when a young seafarer dies on a ship, it even on a big ship, the ripples touch everybody immediately, including the passengers, I have to say. And the passengers are very generous as well. And just as well, we were there as well, because whilst we're on board, Yolanda, the typhoon, hit the Philippines, hit Tacloban and Samar. Mm. And so that caused yet another problem for so many crew who are on the ship. So just being on that ship made a huge difference to the crew as well.
I'd like to pursue that a bit further, because I think that's very interesting, because you must get seafarers, obviously, who are Catholic, but you must get some who are Muslim, other faiths, and yet, they don't sort of get a choice who they're bunking in with or working with. So although they are family away from family in a certain sense, there must be all kinds of issues, difficulties, positive things. I mean, it's different, isn't it?
It is. It's different on every ship. Sometimes you get a ship that's, you know, the crew are all of one nationality. Mm. So in a sense, that makes life a bit easier. Or you may get a, you know, half and half or whatever. But often we get a rare old mix. And you can imagine the situation in, a, say, like a ship where half the crew are Russian and maybe half the crew are Ukraine. Mm. And the tensions that would, you know, naturally emerge there. And I think that the general pattern we're told anyway from the ship authorities is that they, you know, they're kind of told to put all these things to one side while they're working. But you can, tensions are bound to arise in instances like that.
I was just going to, Roger, ask you about a tough question, actually. But we see an awful lot these days, very desperate people, particularly through the Med, perhaps from Libya, you know, through Africa, from Libya, trying to get to Italy or into Europe, obviously, via that route. A lot of deaths, a lot of desperation. Does that sort of thing touch your work?
It does. Not in the way you might think, though, because it's only if a large container ship, for example, were to rescue some people who are trying to get from one part of the Africa to South Europe, as it were. If they're on a ship and trying to help those people, that's how it affects them, and that's where we may come into contact. But we don't actually come into contact, at least I haven't, with migrants themselves.
No, I haven't either in our ports around Immingham. But again, you hear the stories, and one of our container ships actually did rescue some people who were in sea and in boats that were obviously unseaworthy, and they were able to tell, you know, the tale of that rescue and how it affected them and how it affected their supplies and whatever meagre supplies they had to share with these people. It does happen, but not very, very rarely do we come across it.
And before I make a little call for our people out there to support Sea Sunday, to support our seafarers, to support your work as chaplains, I'd like you both to tell me what a typical day entails. And a typical's a silly word for it, isn't it? Because I'm sure they're all different. But
well, it starts early and finishes late, really. You never know what's going to happen when you wake up in the morning. First thing is have a look at the messages and then plan your visits and then go to, not necessarily as many ships as possible, but as many ships with the greatest quality a visit as possible as well, to spend as much time with the seafarers on the ship. That's the key thing for me. And also to be aware, Colin referred to this earlier, to be sensitive and aware that even though things may look fine, sometimes that really is a very thin veneer. And if you just scratch slightly, you'll find that, in fact, there may be a whole range of issues, mostly personal issues, that the seafarers will have, and to give them as much time as possible to share those, if they want to, and see if we can help in any way.
Yeah, and also in Roger's ports and in mine, we have seafarer centres where the lads can come off the ships and visit the centre, do whatever they want, do a bit of shopping, just relax. But also, it's a time when they will often seek the chaplain, because they're reluctant to raise issues that while you're on the ship. They don't want to cause too many waves on the ship. But often in the centre, they'll seek you out and say, look, this is what's happening. Can you do something about it? But I don't want my name brought into the equation. Mm. And that's often, you know, something we do quite a lot. Mm. We're very fortunate as well, both in our ports and in practically all the ports around the country, to have wonderful teams of volunteers. They're kind of often the backbone of our work, in the support that they give us through their parishes, or the fact that they train up to be ship visitors and go visiting on the ships themselves and find out all kinds of things that are going on and can come back to us and we can work together. Very dependent on the lay community and the way that they contribute to the work of the Apostleship of the Sea.
And how long have you both been doing this vital ministry?
I have 11 years.
Well, I'm just into my sixth year now.
Ah, plenty.
Seems like 6 weeks.
Plenty, yeah.
Seems like 60 years.
I often think that, you know, the lovely in Matthew's Gospel, where at the end of Judgment Day, where Jesus says, you know, did you welcome the stranger? Mm. Did you clothe the naked? Did you visit the guys in hospital? Did you visit them when they were in prison? Mm. And we think, yeah, that's our ministry, you know, in encapsulated in that, I think it's Matthew 25.
Yeah. I think that gospel was written for the Apostleship of the Sea, chaplains and volunteer shipwreck visitors, actually. The other day, this fits in, there's another important part of our ministry is making sure that if a seafarer comes off a ship and goes into hospital, that he, oblique she, had visited as well. And not just go and see them once and say, you know, welcome to the UK, is there anything, if there's anything you need, let me know. But keep on visiting, because the reality is, if we don't, nobody else will.
And would that be possibly one of the rare occasions, and not a particularly positive one, that they find themselves out of the confines of the port when they're in a country?
Yeah, if they're, for example, from India or from the Philippines or from Thailand, and they go into hospital, the other day there was a chap from the Philippines, he was in isolation for 5 weeks. So who's going to visit him in isolation?
Mm.
Just the nurses who pop in to do his obs, and the port chaplain or a volunteer. Mm. So I try to visit that chap just about every day for the 5 weeks. Otherwise, to stop him going stir crazy, to be honest.
And that's why it's important as well that, you know, we value and retain and the strength of the local community support for AOS, because when we can't visit everybody who's in hospital or in prison, all the, but there are people who can and who will, and who are very, very capable of doing the visiting. Because obviously, as we said, when a man ends up in hospital, he's going to be there for however length of time. His ship doesn't hang about. The ship goes. And he is, you know, isolated completely. Maybe he can't speak the language. Maybe he has very little by way of money, supplies or whatever. And, you know, we really need to be in there to make sure that whatever time he spends in hospital, we will do whatever we can to ease the burden upon him. Mm. And we, again, largely through the efforts of our community support workers.
Yeah, that's true. Especially when it comes to food as well. Mm. Because if you are from Thailand or from India or from the Philippines, you might find that the local hospital food, no jokes, doesn't actually help, because they can't necessarily tolerate it. It's not quite what they're, if the hospital serves an Asian curry, it's not what they have at home. So now that we do have communities from Kerala, from Goa, from India, more widely from the Philippines in most large cities, and certainly where our ports are, this chap who was in hospital the other day, somebody I know, a man called Nestor, he was bringing him Filipino food every evening to make sure that he was having the nutrition that he would have had he been at home. I'm sure that helped.
And having the sense of knowing that somebody who understands your position, who understands your culture, is there to be with you in your time of need.
Yeah.
Do you know what it strikes me? Very, very basically, talking to you both, is that sometimes I think we forget that we're dealing with human beings here. You know, as long as something gets from A to B, we're a bit complacent about how it does so. We don't think about, you know, when things go wrong, when a man or a woman might not make it into port for whatever reason, whether they're sick, whether they have special dietary needs, whether they're spiritually being catered for. All these things are kind of side issues unless you're involved, are they not?
That's true. And it's very easy to overlook the faith angle here if we're not careful. We become distracted onto other parts of the practical ministry, if you like. But what I've found increasingly, and I've learned a lot myself, I have to say, over the last couple of years, is if you do ask the faith question, there is an immediate recognition and a contact and a communication. I'm not just talking about Catholics here. Most seafarers will be Roman Catholics. But some, as you mentioned earlier, may be Muslim or Hindu or whatever, but they still have faith. That's the common currency, if you like, between a chaplain and the seafarers who we serve.
Now, I'm going to ask you to do the Bob Geldof thing right at the end here. Sea Sunday, there is a collection for Sea Sunday for the work of Apostleship of the Sea. Why should we be putting our pounds, pence, notes possibly, let's get excited about that, into the jar?
Because it's the only chance in the year that the Apostleship of the Sea can make an appeal. That's our one, you know, it's a one-off occasion. And if the Catholic churches don't support what we do, then we don't get supported. So it's vital. It's not kind of a something, well, we might get by without it or not. We couldn't. So as people realise their dependency upon the seafarers and the all the stuff that they bring to us, and aware also that by contributing in monetary terms, they're actually acting out in some way the mission of the church. You know, this is what they are doing. They can't go onto the ships and do the things that we do, but with their help, we can.
Yeah.
Final word to you, Roger.
Yeah, it's coalface gospel work. We used to go abroad to carry out missionary work. Now abroad is coming on the ships to us, and so we can carry out this mission on the coastlines of the UK. But it's not just the coastlines of the UK that we're looking to raise money from. It's everywhere, because everywhere in the country relies on the invisible seafarers.
I call it gospel in the raw.
I tell you what, we'll end on that because I can't better it. Gentlemen, thank you very much. That's the Reverend Roger Stone, Apostleship of the Sea Port Chaplain for, oh, here we go, Southampton, Fawley, Portsmouth, Cowes, Poole, Shoreham, Portland and Weymouth. And Father Colm Kelly, lovely to speak to you too. Apostleship of the Sea Port Chaplain for Immingham and several others. You can reel a few off if you want.
Grimsby, New Holland, Grove, Needby, Keedby, and all ports, all Trent Wharves as well.
So now look at that.
Long area. The entire south bank of the Humber. How's that?
Ladies and gents, boys and girls, support that ministry. You can see how wide and varied it is and all those needs. See Sunday, 12th of July. Please be generous. And we will return for another Catholic News podcast very soon.